From Hollywood, California, the makers of Rinso, America's biggest selling package soap, present Edward G. Robinson with Claire Trevor in a series of powerful dramatic half hours entitled Big Town. Big Town is not a place you could point to on the map. It is a fictitious city, and all the characters in Big Town are fictitious. Any similarity of names or events to living persons is purely accidental. Playing a vital part in the life of Big Town is the Illustrated Press, the town's biggest and most powerful newspaper. And at the helm of that newspaper is Steve Wilson, the dynamic managing editor with an insatiable thirst for more and more circulation. On the same paper, interested in her work, but more deeply interested in Steve Wilson, is the young and pretty society editor, who writes under the name of Lorelei. Steve Wilson is played by Edward G. Robinson, who did such brilliant work in Little Caesar and Kid Galahad. Lorelei is played by Claire Trevor, conspicuous for her characterizations in Maiden Lane and Dead End. There's no denying that there's drama in the newspaper business, but there is just as much drama in the home, drama that very often borders on tragedy, the drama of the housewife with her 1,001 duties, including washing clothes and washing dishes. But that drama can be joyous and have a happy ending if you use the new 1937 Rinso, the biggest-selling packaged soap in America. Rinso makes a merry task out of washing clothes or dishes because those Rinso suds are the liveliest, cheerfulest, most industrious suds you ever saw. They cut your work way down. They do away with scrubbing and boiling. And when you see a large pile of soiled clothes or soiled dishes, just think of Rinso, and there'll be a smile on your face instead of a scowl. The scene of our story is the offices of the Illustrated Press, a boiling cauldron of activity, a bedlam of noises. Everyone upon his toes, rushing, hurrying, grumbling, grunting, shouting, swearing, trying to keep up the mad pace set by Steve Wilson, the managing editor.
Professor Gardner has just been awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Give it a paragraph and stick it on 10.
Peggy Sheridan, a chorus girl, just won a beauty contest at Coney Island.
Make it 2 columns and spread it on the front page.
The guy outside with pictures of a couple of Rembrandts just found in Holland.
Not interested.
There's another guy outside with a new comic strip for Kid.
Oh, send him right in.
Okay.
What are you doing for Sunday feature?
How about a 2-page spread on famous inventors?
Too tame. Make it famous gangsters.
Righto.
In the office of Mr. Peabody, the publisher and major stockholder of the Illustrated Press, we find Mr. Peabody and Steve Wilson, the managing editor, in a heated argument about a libel suit instituted by William B. Harding because of an article Lorelei wrote in the Illustrated Press condemning Harding's factory building as a fire trap.
Peabody, that quick double-cross you gave Lorelei is going to cost you just exactly 100 grand.
Now, you listen to me, Steve. If this paper does go bankrupt paying libel judgments, it's your fault.
Sure. I expected that. Peabody, you wouldn't stand up at your own hanging unless you were supported. But this time, you're lost.
I'll fire Lorelei and...
Sure, you'll fire her.
Good riddance.
But you'll fire me, too. Peabody, stock in the Illustrated Press is transferable. I'm going to make Joe Donahue, the bartender at Parry's, your partner. He's the greatest mixer of cheap jags in town.
Cheap jag?
Yes, cheap jag. Peabody, you gave Lorelei the lead on that story because you knew she would eat it up. And when she saw that Harding's factory was a fire trap, she exposed it because it's the sort of thing she likes.
I'm not running a mutual admiration society. I'm running a newspaper.
We're running a dirt sheet, and you know it. You knew Lorelei wouldn't dig out the real facts back of that story on the Harding factory fire violation. She thought you were on the level.
I am.
Yeah, so was Dillinger.
Now, be careful. You can't afford to lose a job.
Well, you know what you can do with your job.
Now, try to be calm, Steve. It's all very simple. We fire the girl Lorelei, and Harding withdraws his license.
We fire you, and I may have a chance for a seat, at least in the last row of St. Peter's Auditorium.
I think you're getting unduly excited, Steve.
Oh, no, I'm not excited. If you must know, I'm slowly going mad.
Take it easy, Steve. Take it easy. I don't want you getting a nervous breakdown.
Oh, don't worry. I'll probably go on writing these shame columns until Beelzebub calls his chief disciple Steve Wilson home. You know why?
Because you're a newspaper man, Steve.
A newspaper man, my foot. I'll tell you why. Because you were smart enough to declare me in on the profits of your cheap bawdy paper.
We've been doing very well, Steve, thank God. And thank you.
No, don't thank God, and don't thank me. Thank the things that are able to take a man and turn him upside down and inside out. Thank those perverse appetites that are able to make a human being feast like a vulture on the ills and misfortunes of his fellow men.
Oh, I wouldn't say such things, Steve.
No, you wouldn't. You've learned how to calm your conscience into accepting lies and suicides and hatred as normal. Now listen, Peabody, you stay away from my side of this racket. And especially Miss Lorelei. You double-crossed her.
Now wait a minute,
someday
Steve.
I'm going to give the Peabody closet such a shaking up that the rattling of those skeletons will be heard in every corner of the globe. Now remember that, Peabody. You taught me how to sling dirt, and now my marksmanship is perfect. Oh, I can't stand this room any longer. I'm going back to...
Oh, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, Miss Foster?
Miss Lorelei is waiting to see you in your office.
Oh, thank you. I'll go right in. Hello, Lorelei. I'm sorry I kept you waiting. Just been talking to St. Peabody.
Oh, that's all right.
But I'm going to get right down to business. Lorelei, you're a fool.
Well, that's a pretty business. I didn't know you were a psychoanalyst.
Well, Peabody made a sucker out of you.
Well, he's been making a sucker out of you for a good many years.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the spot you find yourself in.
I know. Peabody told me the happy news that I'll cost the paper $100,000 in a libel suit because of that article I wrote on Harding's factory.
Well, Peabody was born a liar, is a liar, and will lie on Judgment Day. Harding is out to get Peabody. That's why Peabody gave you the lead on that story.
I wrote it on Peabody's fact.
Yes, I know you did. Oh, and a great yarn, too. Yes, ma'am, you made that piece sizzle. Congratulations.
For getting into a libel suit?
Oh, no, for getting the news. You wrote the best piece the big town has read in a long time.
Well, it isn't worth $100,000.
Oh, sure it is. That was a great head, Lorelei. Mr. Harding's Inferno. A great head for describing the factory Harding owns. Mr. Harding's Inferno. You know, I like that. Yes, ma'am, I like that.
Well, Harding doesn't.
Now, look, Lorelei. Let me give you the lowdown on the Peabody-Harding feud.
They know each other?
Certainly. Peabody hates Harding because Harding is no phony. He's on the level. They meet on charity boards and church councils. Peabody is always trying to sell real estate to some charitable institution at 5 times what it's worth. Harding is always trying to stop him, and does.
The hypocrite. It's Peabody who should be exposed by the Illustrated Press, not Harding.
Oh, and leave ourselves open for the DA's office to clamp down on the paper?
That factory is the worst fire trap that
I... Sure, Lorelei, sure. It's Inferno with a capital N. It's the devil's oven. And it was conceived and built and executed by a Peabody.
Not by...
No. Not by our benefactor, St. Peabody, the public-spirited owner of the Illustrated Press, but by a son-in-law.
Oh.
Harding owns nothing. He's a stockholder in the bank and holds a mortgage on the factory. He's innocent.
Well, I took Peabody's word for it that Harding was guilty.
Well, you'll know better next time. You'll know that Peabody has no word, no honor, no friends. No, not even worms waiting for him at the end of the journey.
He can buy men and women to carry out his filthy schemes.
Yes, you're right. He can buy me to do his dirty work for him.
Well, he can't buy me.
An excellent bit of heroics, but futile. You can't quit.
Why can't I?
Because you'll be double-crossing me. Now, I need you, Lorelei, now more than ever. If you quit, Peabody will offer you up to Harding as a sacrifice.
Sacrifice?
Sure. He'll paint you as a scatterbrained society girl. A sweet-scented Lady Bountiful who came out of society to interfere with the smooth course of journalism. He'll tell everyone he fired you.
But I quit.
Sure you did. But he won't tell that to Harding.
How can you stand such a man all these years?
I can't. And I can't give up the luxuries I don't need, but have trained myself to enjoy. Vicious habit.
Why don't you tell him what you think of him?
I did, Lorelei, I did. And every time I tell him what I think of him, I burn a candle for my soul. And now, Lorelei, if you promise to stick, I'll go up and tell Mr. Peabody's symbol of cockeyed justice just what I think of him.
Oh, you mean his lawyer, Mr. Salsa?
Yes, Salsa. Mr. Salsa. Will you promise to stick?
I promise.
Okay, I'm on my way. Good morning. Is Mr. Salter in his office?
Yes, Mr. Salter. You're right now.
Hello, Steve. How's the mighty editor?
Oh, cut it out, Salter. You've got a job to do and a very important one. Get us out of this Harding libel suit or you'll be minus a scalp.
But we haven't a leg to stand on, Mr. Wilson. We libel the man.
Say, whose lawyer are you, Salter? Ours or Harding's? Come on, get us out of this.
I can't.
Listen, Salter. I had a nice editorial all ready to print in the Illustrated Press as the start of a campaign to make you a judge. To tell how able a lawyer you are and what a fine upright judge you'd make. Peabody's already talked to the boss downtown. You were all set to spend the rest of your life in judicial cold storage.
But now all bets are off, you understand? All bets are off.
Well, can I help it that Mr. Harding has led a clean life? He's a respectable...
Respectable. Respectable is a relative term. There must be a slip somewhere.
Yeah, but he's never slipped.
Well, then he must be a horrible bore to someone. Someone must be sick and tired of him. How does his wife stand it?
She loves him.
Yes, I know, but that doesn't mean that she stands him. Oh, besides, that's out of your department. That's Mrs. Corbett's department, Advice to the Lonely Heart. That gives me an idea. I'll use your phone. This will only take a minute. Lonely Hearts Department? Steve Wilson talking. Tell Mrs. Corbett to go to my office as soon as she can and wait for me. Tell me, Salsa. Was there ever a divorce in the Harding family?
My office investigated that angle thoroughly. There are no divorces.
Well, then we'll make one.
Make one?
Yes. Manufacture one. Create one, you know. Fix one.
How?
Well, that's your business, my upright judge, not mine. You know the ingredients.
But look here...
Well, look here, nothing. Now, send me your best investigators. No detectives. You know, investigators. There's a difference. One finds news and the other gets it.
I understand.
Good day. Hello, Arnold. Liked your column last night.
Well, thanks, boss. How about a raise? Got a new kid, the cutest little kid.
Well, congratulations, Arnold. I'll send it through for you.
Gee, that's great.
Oh, and by the way, come into my office, will you? I want to talk to you.
Okay.
Now, Arnold, I'm going to make this short. I heard that the Hardings, you know, William B. and his wife, are having tough sledding.
You mean the socialite Hardings?
Yes.
Say, boss, that's so hot you can start a fire at the store club with it. I'll spread this one, boy, and will Peabody like it.
Now, take it easy, take it easy. I don't want a big story, Arnold. It isn't worth it. Just an interesting line, something like this. Is it true that the Hardings, socialites, are throwing sticks and stones at each other and are about to renovate it? Then ended like this, too bad. Nice people shouldn't do such things.
Thanks, boss. That saves me writing it.
Now, goodbye, Arnold, and I won't forget that baby needs a pair of shoes. You'll find it in the pay envelope.
Thanks, boss. And throw in a bottle of scotch, just in case baby catches cold.
Hello? Miss Foster?
Yes, Mr. Wilson?
Get me Charlie in the morgue. And tell him I want all the clips on the William B. Harding.
Yes, sir, right away.
Come in.
For me, Mr. Wilson.
Yes. Your lonely heart space, Mrs. Corbett, has been very interesting.
Thank you.
May I make a suggestion?
Always received gratefully from you, Mr. Wilson.
I want you to get me a picture and a story, a signed story, by Mrs. William B. Harding, president of Help a Neighbor Society. A story on divorce.
Of course, Mr. Wilson. I know Mrs. Harding very well.
Yes?
She's always glad to cooperate with the Illustrated Press.
Well, now, that's fine. I wanted to cover particularly the relationship of stenographers to their employers as a reason for divorce.
Yes.
Mrs. Harding's opinion on domestic affairs is very important.
It should make a very interesting article, Mr. Wilson.
Come in. Oh, it's you. Now, come in, boys. Come
Hi,
in.
Mr. Wilson.
Well, good day, Mrs. Corbett.
Good day, Mr. Wilson.
Sit down. Sit down, Collins.
Thanks. I want you to meet Kelly here.
Oh, hello, Kelly.
Hello. How do you feel, Mr. Wilson?
Oh, fine, fine. Say, I haven't seen you since the Miller case. You did a very good job then.
I just got the evidence.
You certainly did. Found it lying around when no one else could find it.
Is this the same setup, boss?
You know William B. Harding?
The banker, the society guy?
Yes. He wants $100,000 from the poor Illustrated Press.
Why, the robber. A libel suit.
Exactly.
Do we get the usual bonuses for the right evidence, if he calls it off?
Oh, double, Collins. Double bonus.
What's the matter with him?
Well, it seems that Mrs. Harding wants some grounds for divorce.
We'll accommodate the lady.
How long do you think it'll take?
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks. We'll tear down in 2 weeks what it took Harding 30 years to build up. Thanks, boys, and good luck. Mr. Peabody, like the British Navy, expects every man to do his duty.
That brings down the curtain on the first part of tonight's episode of Big Town, starring Edward G. Robinson with Claire Trevor. The people are leaving their seats for the brief intermission. I don't know just why, but people do get thirsty after listening to something that's really exciting. And right now, there's quite a group gathered around the fountain in the lobby.
That was the feature of a tagline, wasn't it? Mr. Peabody expects every man to decide.
I wonder what's going to happen next. Isn't it exciting?
Got a cigarette, Jack?
Thanks.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Thompson.
Hello, Jane.
Oh, I think the show is simply grand. What I like about Mr. Robinson is that you can understand every word he says.
Yes, he is a splendid actor. And so is Miss Trevor.
Oh, yes.
And that is, I mean, she's a splendid actress. I always thought she ought to be in radio. And I'm mighty grateful to Rinso for bringing us this program.
So am I. But I'm even more grateful to the new 1937 Rinso for bringing me a cheerful wash day.
What do you mean?
Before I found out about Rinso, I used to be afraid to talk above a whisper on Monday. Bertha was always so tired and cross, poor thing. But now she has the clothes snowy white, on the line in no time at all, and a cheerful smile right through the day.
You don't say so. Well, I'm certainly going to try this miracle worker right away. I've been meaning to for a long time. I remember now that the salesman who sold me my washer said that Rinso would give such wonderful suds.
Yes, Rinso suds are marvelously rich and so long-lasting. Why, I wouldn't think of using anything else. Oh, tell me, have you seen Mrs. Carroll lately?
Yes, I have.
The people are getting back to their seats again, and now we're ready for the second part of the show. 2 weeks have gone by. In his attempt to force Harding to drop the libel suit, Steve Wilson has printed in the Illustrated Press a series of well-directed items calculated to arouse suspicion and distrust in the Harding household. The cumulative effect has been to destroy what was formerly a peaceful and happy home. Our scene opens in the library of the palatial Harding home. Mr. Harding is seated at his desk, distraught and worried. His wife, Elizabeth, is standing in the doorway.
Come in, Elizabeth. Please sit down.
Thank you, William.
Elizabeth, you must believe in me.
Oh, I want to.
Don't you see? Peabody's manufactured this entire thing. Remember, Elizabeth, the first step, the little piece in the paper that said we were about to separate?
How could I forget
it? Of course. Mrs. Radin brought it to your attention. That was vicious. Exactly what Peabody wanted.
But why?
The interview with you by Mrs. Corbett.
Yes.
All of that was a put-up job. And getting my secretary drunk so that I would help her was all part of the scheme, too.
Did you have to take her to a room at the hotel and have your picture taken?
It was a business acquaintance of mine who suggested I take her to his room.
A business acquaintance?
Yes, a man I thought I knew. Casually, Mr. Kohler or Coker. No, it was Collins. What difference does that make? Can't you believe in me?
Believe in you? Oh, Will, I've always had such faith in you.
Yes. Yes, you've had faith in me for 30 years. Why can't you have faith in me now?
Oh, Will.
Listen to me, Elizabeth. Last night I walked from my office into that little church at the top of the street. Remember? Where we both thanked God for our son.
Yes.
But this time I was alone. I asked the Lord to make clear to me his punishment of us, to tell me what we've done to deserve this. Oh, Elizabeth, won't you try to understand?
I am trying, Will, but I hear people laughing at me. Everywhere I go, I hear people talking in whispers, mocking me, making me feel ashamed. No, Will, I think it's best we separate. For a little while, anyway.
All right. That will make you happy, Elizabeth. All that matters to me now is your happiness. I'm going to see the editor, Mr. Wilson, at his home. Today. Now.
Steve, how can you go on playing that tune?
Who has a better right, Lorelei?
Well, you're a first-class optimist. If you think anybody will abide with you after this, even God.
He has abided with me so far.
He has tolerated you.
Now, what's eating you now?
Well, I just had to leave the newspaper woman's club. No one talks to me civilly.
Well, maybe they haven't anything to say.
You know why they don't talk to me. It's because I'm on that rotten sheet of yours. Because you're taking the Harding family and crucifying them.
It seems to me that you could have explained why we are crucifying Harding since you started Harding's march to Calvary with your original story.
If you're trying to pass the buck, Steve. You can't do it. You know I could have rectified that.
Only by paying $100,000 and ruining me and Peabody and the Illustrated Press.
By apologizing.
Well, we try that.
How? By sending a cheap lawyer who offered Harding an apology in the shape of a favor to him.
Well, you must forgive Salsa. He has been working too hard for a judgeship to know how to handle justice.
Well, how long is this going to go on?
Until Harding recalls his legal bloodhound.
You're going to frame Harding more and more and spread his manufactured shame over a filthy libel sheet. And that last headline of yours, Mr. William B. Harding found in hotel room with drunken stenographer. Horrible manufactured dirt.
Ah, but the fact remains that Harding put her up in the hotel.
Yes, because he's kind and good. That poor girl had been with him for years, looking after his office, helping him. He was only trying to be of service to a girl who couldn't navigate and might get into trouble.
You know, I think you've got something there.
So have you something.
on your conscience that will eat your heart out sometime. Oh, you'll beat Harding, all right. You'll defeat him. Not because you're stronger, but because he loves someone more than he loves himself.
Excuse me, Mr. Wilson. I think maybe you want something to eat before I go.
Sure, Minna. Give him rat poison. I'm through with him. Goodbye.
There she goes. Nay, nay, but she's mad.
She doesn't like me, Minna.
I know women. I think she do, yeah.
Well, what makes you think so?
Because you're a nice man.
She disagrees with you, definitely.
That I don't understand. You are so kind to everybody.
Yes? Yeah? Is that why people try to shoot me? My best friends won't talk to me?
Well, I don't know. I've been with you pretty near 10 years.
Well, you've been very good to me, Minna. You helped me.
Thanks for my picture in your paper.
Oh, no, mention it.
My Swedish club vote to buy only the Illustrated Press.
Oh, well, thanks. That helps the circulation. By the way, tell me, what does the Scandinavian Domestic Dramatic and Athletic Club offer this week by the great Ibsen?
Just once a month we play Ibsen, Mr. Wilson.
Oh.
This week we be American.
American? Yeah. Well, what do you play in the American dramatic series? Barbara Fritchie or Pocahontas?
Lincoln.
What? You play Lincoln?
Nay, Mr. Wilson. I recite Lincoln.
Well, that will please honest Abe, I'm sure.
Yeah. The Gettysburg Address.
No, Minna.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson.
Well, let's hear some of it.
70 years. Excuse me, Mr. Wilson.
Why, certainly.
I'll start once more.
Yes, go right ahead.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Created equal. Tell me, Minna, do you really believe that?
Sure I believe it, Mr. Wilson. Sometimes they start, but they don't finish.
Yes, you're right, Minna. Sometimes they start, but they don't finish.
I answer the door, Mr. Wilson.
All right, Minna.
Right in here, Mr. Harding.
Thank you.
Mr. Harding? Oh, come in, Mr. Harding.
Thank you.
If I said that this was a pleasure...
Or a surprise.
You wouldn't believe me.
Under the circumstances, hardly.
Quite right.
Mr. Wilson, as the managing editor of, shall I say, a newspaper.
Yes, if you're generous, Mr. Harding.
There are times when it's difficult to be generous.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
As the managing editor of the Illustrated Press, you've done me an irreparable injury.
But I'm sorry, but as the managing editor of the press, we print news.
I'm neither sorry, nor is my personal life such as it is news. Do you realize that out of pure malice you're separating me from my wife? We've been happily married for 30 years.
We printed the news.
You printed a manufactured scandal to stop my suit against this paper.
But if it was crooked, the courts will give you justice.
There's no defense against such tactics as you and your sheet indulge in.
Now, wait a minute. You expected us to give you $100,000 of the newspaper's money, didn't you?
I expect nothing from anyone now, except my peace of mind, my wife back, and the respect you've stolen from me.
Oh, then you will stop the suit. Well, that's very sensible.
No, not sensible, but sensitive. You know, there should be some way by which you and your kind could be stopped. Some way by which the honest, decent newspaper fraternity could make you stop your blackmail under the guise of journals.
You're unduly bitter. But I can't say that I blame you. But since you are willing to play ball with us, we will show you that the Illustrated Press doesn't deserve your characterization. We'll retract our story.
Retract? Can you retract the harm you've done? Can you heal the wounds you've inflicted on Mrs. Harding, the degradation of my poor secretary? Can you?
Well, tomorrow my paper shall carry a special article on the divinity of forgiveness. And the front page will carry a story of your qualities in the past. Charity, respectability, oh yes, and a statement that the Illustrated Press has made an unfortunate mistake.
Unfortunate mistake? Oh. Hatched a foul scheme to bring me to terms, to make me cringe and beg for mercy in spite of all my rights. Because those I love are dearer to me than my own pride.
And as for Mr. Peabody and myself, believe me, Mr. Harding, we humbly apologize.
I don't want your apology. I want back my peace of mind. I expect to see you rectify this filthy business as much as you can in your yellow sheet. My lawyer will immediately discontinue my action. The suit will be wiped out. But how about your conscience, Mr. Wilson?
Well, my conscience, Mr. Harding, like John Brown's body, lies moldering in the grave, wrapped in a yellow sheet.
Goodbye, Mr. Wilson.
Goodbye, Mr. Harding. Well, that's that. Lorelei.
Yes, I came back. I saw Mr. Harding go.
Yes, and now you see what he left behind.
What?
The greatest faker in the world, washed up.
Washed up?
Yes. I tried, Lorelei, to serve two gods. Mammon and his disciple, St. Peabody. But I'm through with St. Peabody.
You've got a moral hangover.
You think so?
Yes. And when you write your resignation, you've got mine with it.
For better or for worse?
For better or for worse.
That brings down the curtain on the second episode of Big Town, starring Edward G. Robinson with Claire Trevor. Not many years ago, there was a popular song called I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. A housewife who was adept at parodies took hold of it and changed it to I'm Forever Washing Dishes. And there was a lot of truth in it. To many housewives, it seems as if they are forever washing dishes. But not to those who use the new 1937 Rinso. Because using Rinso in the dishpan is like having extra help in the kitchen. Those Rinso suds go places and do things. They'll get rid of grease and dirt in a jiffy. And yet they are so gentle, they won't make your hands red or rough-looking. Try the new 1937 Rinso in the big green and yellow box. Use it for dishes, the week's wash, and all your household cleaning. Next week at this same time, Edward G. Robinson with Claire Trevor bring us the third episode in the series of powerful dramatic half hours entitled Big Town. Listeners, please keep your dials tuned to the Al Jolson Show to follow immediately. Al Jolson has for his special guest the latest sensation of the screen, the talented and beautiful Sonia Henie. For the benefit of our listeners in the mountain and coast time zones, the Al Jolson program will be broadcast at the usual time, 9:30 Mountain Time and 8:30 Pacific Coast Time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.